Hi, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, the show for animal training and behavior nerds, where I, Ryan Cartledge, interview the world's most proficient animal training and behavior geeks. We're absolutely thrilled and grateful to have you here with us today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss a single episode. Each episode of this show is brought to you on behalf of the ATA membership. And if you like the conversations in this episode, then you're invited to continue them with like-minded behavior nerds within the membership area, which you can find out more about at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. Once part of the ATA tribe, you'll get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalogue of previous web class replays, plus a huge library of videos and projects to help problem solve your training challenges. Plus, we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group and forum areas. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior geeks. But we will get started on today's episode, which is part two of my recording with the amazing Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz. If you haven't listened to part one yet, then my suggestion would be to go back and listen to that and then revisit this episode once you've done so. I hope you're strapped in and ready for the geekiness. Let's dive in.
Another research, and this is what's done. Okay, so because of that, or the work that we were doing, then I start getting different kind of students. Students basically that were either working already in zoos, or they were interested in zoology, or things like that. So one of the students that was working already in a zoo, that is, she did a very interesting thesis about jackpots. You see, that was another hot topic. So, and this is what we do, you know, we try to get what is a hot topic here, or what people have questions, and try to do some scientific research. So in that one, that was very interesting, you know, because the first problem that we had was, okay, so what is a jackpot? You know, how are we going to define jackpot? Because, we have read Ken Pryor's Don't Shoot the Dog, and there is a description there. So one thing that we did is that before we did the study, I told the students, you know, we need to do like a questionnaire and recruit several top trainers and ask them some questions about the jackpot so we can design the experiments that really models what is going on in the natural environment. Now, by the way, I started doing this because, you know, when I was start showing these experiments in Clicker Expo or in other conference, the trainers will come and tell me, I would not do that, you know. You know that I don't do that in the... I say, I know that, but, you know, to do research, we have certain constraints, you know. We have to stay in the baseline. We have to keep some things constant and all of that. So, but then everybody will say, because everybody sort of does it like a little different. So I start learning that, before doing research, I should ask expert trainers to tell me, okay, how do they do it? So to try to imitate them there. Yeah? This happens to me, and I'm going to backtrack a little bit. So I'm going to put the jackpots on hold because I'm forgetting about another very important experiment that I did early on, and that was the poison cue. You know, the poison cue, let me first explain what the poison cue is. You know, when I start coming to the, when Ken Pryor came to North Texas, and she also gave a talk in the Texas Association of Behavior Analysis, and she mentioned this phenomenon that she called that she called the poison cue. And what she was saying was that, and this is like field observations that she was doing, you know, she wanted to transform, like she was figuring out, okay, how can we, you know, switch this traditional training to positive reinforcement, okay? So they would, so what they will call it, the crossover dogs, you know, and that, and that time, I mean, it's still, it is important that, but in those days, you know, since clicker training was coming up, most of the training was done, you know, the traditional way, you know, with corrections. So the idea is, okay, how can we, or how can they, the, like facilitate the transition from corrections to a positive reinforcement, or what would be the effect? And what Karen started noticing is that all those dogs that were so-called crossovers, even though you were using the clicker and positive reinforcement, they didn't respond quite the same as a dog who started purely with positive reinforcement, okay? In fact, you know, they used to have a name for those dogs. They will call it operant dogs, because those dogs were like throwing behavior at you, like click me or what should I do. They were always engaged. Where the other dogs, even though they offered you behavior, they were cautious. They were not so trusting on you and all of that. Of course, you know, that will change. So one of my students, I was talking a lot about the problem. So one of my students took it up and said, okay, let's do research on that. So what we did is, let's say, okay, so let's create a cue that we're going to build purely with positive reinforcement. And what that meant was that, let's say, this cue number one, we're going to say the cue, and then reinforce approximations. What we were teaching is the dog to come, but we will say ven, which is Spanish for come, and we train that purely with positive reinforcement. Then we will have a second cue that we will train with positive reinforcement and corrections, you know, with that ven. We will say the cue, which was punir, which is, I think it's French for punishment. So we will say punir, and if the dog didn't come to us, we will correct him. And once that the dog was in position, we will reinforce him. So in one hand, we have behavior analysis with differential reinforcement, and we have some sort of traditional training in which, you know, you correct the mistakes and reinforce the corrects, you know? So, I mean, so the dog learns in both conditions, you know? So at one point, the dog had no corrections, you know? But the two cues, when we delivered those two cues, they were, kind of say, we noticed that the dog were behaving, the same dog was behaving differently. In one, it was all happy, learning really fast, and all that. But in the other one, again, cautious, like it looked like he had some attentional deficits and all of that, which was fascinating, because we can turn on and off the same effect with the same dog. And to me, that was a tremendous learning experience, because to me the puzzle was, wow, we have run this experiment for a very long time. So let's say this dog has been reinforced like 800 times in the punir condition with the punir cue, 800 times, but still he hasn't recovered, you know? Because the idea, what I have learned in behavior analysis, and these are the ethical guidelines, unfortunately, in behavior analysis, that it's okay to correct or even to punish if you use positive reinforcement for an alternative behavior. because the assumption is that once the learner learns the behavior, he's going to avoid all those corrections, and then positive reinforcement is going to take him out of that world, and the dog is going to be happy. Okay, so in that situation, that didn't happen. And I would say, oh my God, listen, what is going on here? You know, why is this dog not that happy? You know, and I could see, and since it was the same dog, it was very clear for us to see the difference. So that taught me a lot about stimulus control. So the first thing that we were doing, like what we came out, it is that we learned is that the behavior was not ruined. The behavior of coming wasn't ruined. What was ruined was the environment. Because if we say ban, this dog will come happily. But if we say punir, then this dog it wasn't behaving that happy. It will come, it will get his treat, but the body language, the speed, the way that he will come, it was different. So the first thing that we say, okay, so that's very interesting. Like the behavior sort of gets attached to the environment, you know, and they sort of work together, you know. So if you say ban, you evoke all kinds of good behavior, but you say punir, you evoke this behavior. Now this is important because when people use corrections or punishers, they think that they are suppressing the behavior. Yeah? But really, the form of the topography of the behavior is not get suppressed. The effect that those procedures have is that they ruin the environment. They ruin the cue or the reinforcer. In this case, was like the hardeners, the context in which we did that experiment, and the cue punir. Now we have a solution for that, because then people start paying attention a lot. First, you know, start getting emails of people who do agility, and once one of those obstacles has become a poison cue, and suddenly they will give the command and the dog will not behave. And the way that at that time, since the behavior is not ruined, the time I was given the advice, you know, the way to do it, which was suggested by the experiment, is change the cue and retrain the behavior. Yeah? Because once that you do that and retrain the behavior with positive reinforcement, and then you will get a happy dog. But still, you know, if you bring back the old cue, the punir or whatever, the behavior is, the effect will be there. So it was like a sort of like a partial solution to it. You know, like in agility, what they were doing, rather than they use a voice cue, they will change it to a visual cue and retain the behavior, and no problem. Yeah, if they get into those problems. So people start doing that, which makes me very happy, start solving problems like that. But also, what we were aware is like, oh my God, you know, in these shelters or in these rescues, and when you are getting a dog from a world of corrections to the positive reinforcement, the first thing that we have to do is to change all the basic commands and their names. Because for sure, the name of the dog was going to be poison. The word calm, sit, lay, all of those for sure were going to be poison, because, you know, that was kind of the history. So what people start doing, it is changing the name of the dog and finding some other ways to using some other cues and retraining the same behavior, like the calm and sit, to bring about the behavior, but also in a better emotional state, you know, rather than one that looks cautious, fearful of that. You know, we did that research in 2004. And into today, I'm still thinking of the implications of that, you know. And actually, that has broadened my understanding of stimulus control incredible. You know, I've been saying this thing about change the cue and retrain the behavior for a long time. But it's really not until recently that I have really taken that to heart and to try to solve other problems. You know, one thing that that now is so clear, which, you know, it should have been clear a long time ago when Ogden Lindsley told me about it, it is that all behavior, it is specific to an environment. So it sort of like lives in that bubble, you know? Like behavior like sitting or coming, it's not really a general behavior. They are all tied in with a particular environment. If you change that environment, you change the behavior, the antecedent environment. So now we're using that logic to deal with severe problem behaviors that have puzzled people for a long time, like craving in horses or bobbing, air sucking. So behaviors like that, because now we think, okay, sure, the horse is bobbing, but that bobbing is specific to an environment. Let's change the environment and train the behavior that we want, excluding the bobbing or something. And we have been successful. This is the recent things that that we have been doing. And I'm very excited about that. And I truly believe that the next frontier for animal training, and not only for animal training, but for behavior analysis in general, is a deeper understanding of stimulus control and how to use that to solve problems, behavioral problems, and not only that, to enhance our training, you know, and to get quicker training, better results, and all of that. And, you know, of course, you know, Portal, we have done experiments with that. Portal, which is the Portable Operant Research and Teaching Lab, you know, has also been very helpful for us to try to model those stimulus control issues. You'll see, they're going to be, I know that over that you and your gang, the animal, what is it called?
Animal Training Academy.
Yeah, the Animal Training Academy, which I'm very thankful that you guys had embraced Portal really, really nicely. It is powerful, but and more things are going to come, and we're going to start showing more projects, because it's a really nice and easy way for us to understand more about behavior. Not only, well, it's also very helpful to train other people to understand about the principles of behavior, but as research tool, which we haven't promoted that much, it is also really, really powerful. But anyway, that will come later on. My time, I'm just giving you a taste. But, you know, the poison cue, more than the other research, it probably is the one who has had the biggest impact in the animal training community. Okay, with that long detour, maybe I can come back now to to jackpots. Then I tell you a story about stimulus control and jackpots there. Okay, so we were gonna be doing this experiment on jackpots. So we sent this questionnaire to 20 animal trainers that we knew that they were good, at least to our standard. To our surprise, we asked questions like, what is a jackpot? What do you think are the benefits of the jackpot? And how do you use it in your training? Yeah? Okay, so a lot of people will use it basically to reinforce excellence, you know. That there was a lot of agreement that, or to reinforce really exceptional behavior on that. But aside from that, like, what is a jackpot and what are the effects? We got 17 different answers. People were varying, like, how they will do it. You know, in general, they will agree, but in the details, it was different. So we have a problem there, you know? And so I said to my students, you know, let's go with the one which was basically more the Karen Pryor, the one that that we hear the most, that we think that is the most popular, and just do that, okay? And so we did that experiment, and the effects that we got were not the ones that trainers would report. We were not able to reinforce excellence. Basically, what we got is more confusion for the dog, you know? So the dog will do something, and we will do a jackpot, and the dog, of course, will say, whoa, what happened here? And start collecting all this food, and then he was going to go and do again. We were using a target, touching a target. He was going to go again and touch the target, but before he will get to the target, he will come back to the place where we deliver the reinforcer and say, is there more food here? Maybe I miss one or something. So it disrupted the training. And so, of course, I presented this research in Clicker Expo, and all the trainers say, no, you're not using it right, and all of that. And I say, well, you know, that is not a, I would say, that is, well, there is many ways to use it right. So just tell me how would you use it, you know? But then I start noticing something that actually is, that in some circles is becoming important. I start noticing something, you know, every time my guiding trainers, like, that I watch a lot is definitely Ken Ramirez, Kay Lawrence, and Alexandra Kurland. Like, I watch them because they do all kinds of really cool things, but it is in the details that they do that, you know, this extra knowledge is there. So one thing that I noticed, and this has to do with stimulus control, it is that every time that they will use the jackpot, they change the clicker. So they will just not click and do the jackpot. All of them will do like, excellent, click, jackpot. Beautiful. You know, they will add another extra word because they were impressed with the excellence of the behavior, and they will add that. So in a sense, that extra word in my mind is telling the animal when the jackpot is coming and when it is not. And that helped with the confusion. Or that should help. We haven't done the experiment, but I'm sure we'll do more of this experiment. But I have known now, not experiments, but, you know, some practitioners, that they use different markers. And the different markers, like, for example, like one that is similar to what we did for in the yard pot, they go and say, spread. And they spread several treats on the floor, you know? They will say, go, and then a toy will come, or a certain position. So what they are doing, it is that, I would say, that they are looking at particular reinforcers and attaching a particular click on that. So what that does, it is when you say a marker, a word or a sound that is associated with a calm delivery of the reinforcer, you get a calm animal. You can say another marker where you're going to do some reinforcer that excited, you immediately get an excited animal. So they can play with the emotions of the dog just by changing, by signaling exactly what market is going to come, you know? oh no, what reinforcer is going to come? But if you think about it and say, oh my God, that is very common in humans. We have different markers for different reinforcers. And we get excited in different ways and all of that, you know? So I say, podcast, and then I produce a smile on you or something, you know? Or, you know, thinking about it. So I think that is worth for us, and I'm going to try to convince, and I think that I have a new student that is interested in that. It's worth for us to look into that and try to do some research and look more into the antecedent part, not just like particular reinforcers. But so that's what we have done on jackpots and all that. Another one that is related to the jackpots, you know, a lot of people talk about use high rate of reinforcement. Use high rate of reinforcement. You know, because learning it happens a lot, which is true, you know. And this is why it's good to try to do experiments, just like in the jackpot. I mean, if you fail, especially if you fail, then you start thinking, wait a minute, I'm not doing it right here. There is something else about the jackpots that I'm not, or that people do with respect to jackpots that are not being described clearly, you know, because here we try to hold some variables constant and we're not getting the results. So that's why that's one of the advantages to do research. So the same thing happened to us with this high rate of reinforcement, okay? So we try to teach a dog to lift one leg by using high rates of reinforcement, or to lift the other leg by using just following the regular shaping without really putting extra reinforcers there, you know, or to do little tasks. Okay, so in there, the big lesson for us was that what people are doing is that they are artificially giving a lot of treats, high rate, click, rate, click, rate, click, 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 and all of that. But those clicks and treats, that high rate of reinforcement is not driven by the behavior. It's more driven by the trainer, you know. And you cannot, during acquisition, you cannot independently manipulate the high rate of reinforcement independent of the behavior. What should drive the high rate of reinforcement should be a high rate of correct behavior. And in order for you to achieve that, then what you have to do is slice the behavior small enough and create a lot of subsets, so you have what we now call a clean, small loop, training loop, and do many, 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 many of those. And that's what is going to create the high rate of reinforcement. You cannot create high rate of reinforcement artificially. I mean, you can do it, but it's just, you know, it's like rapid fire clicks and treats. And really, so because, you know, you cannot separate the reinforcement from the behavior. So if there is a high rate of reinforcement, it is because there is a high rate of correct behavior. So the focus should be not so much in the high rate, independently of the behavior. It is how can I set up my training or slice the task so my dog or whatever learners you are working with, it is achieving that high rate, or reinforcement. Because we did it like that and we failed, you know. There were some differences, but say, okay. And that makes us think, oh, wait a minute, what are we doing here, you know? And then we realize things like that. So it is, no, we have done so many things. And I have yet to publish a bunch of the things that we're doing, but you know, it's hard to keep up because, you know, to me, I'm really more interested. Okay, what is the next problem? What is the next research projects? But people are interested. Later on, I can send you a link to the library of the University of North Texas and all, at least all the animal training theses that we have done. You can get them there for free, which is all what you have to just Google. Or no, like the keyword is my name and all my students' thesis will come there, and then you will see the projects. And actually, you know, ORCA has a website and a bunch of them are listed there too. And you can get some, but the majority of the research have been master's thesis. We have some other research that is not reported there, but that'll be a good way for you not to wait until we publish all of these kind of things. But, you know, it has been a really enriching experience. And really what facilitated a lot of this is my association with these excellent animal trainers. You know, they really had taught me a lot and also have opened my eyes to the possibilities of training and research. And so I'm very grateful to them, you know, because you need an environment in which all of these ideas are, you know, can come about and for you to get excited. Okay.
Yeah, amazing. Hey, there's one other topic that you mentioned to me when we caught up a few weeks ago that you might talk about, and that was keep going signals.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's come back while we, and actually I didn't, I just mentioned this about the issue that we were doing, like, is the click a bridge, okay? So, and also the other issue is, do I have to treat every time that I click, you know? And here there are two views, you know? So, if you listen to persons like, I'm sure you have heard this because Bob Bailey and Marion Bailey and the brilliance they have. If you click, even if it is your mistake, you have to reinforce. Yeah. And the reason that they do that is because they are looking at the, they have two choices there. Yeah. They are sort of making a trade-off. They say, well, if I click, and it was my mistake, because usually that was, if I click and that was my mistake and it was not the animals, should I reinforce that behavior? And if I withhold the treat, maybe I minimize the effect, yeah? That's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin, it is, yeah, but if I click and the reinforcer doesn't come, then I'll be lying to my animal. I would say, here comes a treat, and no treat is coming. Okay. So those are the cue properties of the click, you know. So what they want to preserve is those cue properties of the click. So they themselves tell you, the click should mean just one thing. Go and get your treat, or the treat is coming to you. Yeah. So that's one part of trainers. Other trainers, more influenced by classical conditioning, they think, wait a minute, you know, that's why I have a click, because they think that the click is a substitute of the food. You know, that every time that you deliver this conditioned reinforcer is like you were given food, without giving food. And the purpose for them to build these conditioned reinforcers is so they cannot give that much food to begin with, so they can replace this food. So for them, it's very natural to click and not treat. You know, it's sort of like they are given, you know, some food. So one of them, so one camp is looking at the reinforcing effects of the click, like the classical conditioning camp, and the other camp, like the Bob Bailey, are looking at the cue properties of the click. Yeah, so they are looking at different aspects of the click, you know, because a click has both aspects. It reinforces the previous behavior, but it also tells you what to do next. Yeah? So that's the cue properties. So, let me see. So, okay. So they say, well, okay, let's do an experiment on this, okay? So we did the experiment. So the first experiment that we have done several of these. The first experiment that we did, it is we were teaching a dog sit and bow, okay? So in one condition, the first condition is we train those behaviors with continuous reinforcement. Every time that we click, we'll train, we click, we train. But once that we build that behavior, then we cut the food in half. Randomly, we'll sometimes click and treat, and sometimes we'll click and not treat. But overall, it was like at the end of the 10 trials, we will have 5 clicks with treats and 5 clicks without treats. Yeah? Okay. So, and then we were looking, what happened to the behavior? The behavior deteriorated. The dogs start whining, and the dogs, it took more and more repetitions for them to do the behavior that will say, bow. The dogs, like, they will not hear, bow. The dogs will not bow. And finally, the dog will bow or sit, and the same thing. Okay? So they say, whoa, wait a minute. Here, you know, traditionally, okay, so here we were like surprised, like, wow, this doesn't work like the textbook says the condition reinforces should work. This should not disrupt the behavior. Yeah? We see that. And so we were thinking, well, why would the behavior was disrupted? So one thing that they will tell us, well, you know, is because you cut the food in half, and you train them that they get these 10 treats, and now you're giving them 5, so that might be. I say, okay, fine, so let's do another experiment. In this one, we train the dog to teach to touch two targets. You know, so it will be target, click, treat. Yeah. Target, click, treat. Target, click, treat. Okay? Now, once that we build that behavior, then we added a second click, and we were not going to give any food in that click. So now instead of target, click, treat, we'll go target, click, treat. Yeah? So we were giving an extra click, so we were not cutting the food in half or anything. We were just adding the extra click. The behavior got disrupted. Think about it. What would that dog do when they touch the first target and I click? They go and inspect the food. They go and do whatever they did before to get the food. They do that and there is no food. Say, what? And they come and touch again the target and another click, and then they touch the second target, click, and then they go, and now it's a treat. You know, that frustrated the dogs a lot. So they will leave the session, they will whine and all kinds of things. And they say, wait a minute, what is going on here? This condition reinforcer, it is not working the way that the textbook says. But, you know, the textbooks only talk about the reinforcing aspect of the click. They hardly talk about the cue aspects of the click. And the reason that we were getting those results is we were messing up the cue aspect. The cue the click was becoming unreliable to predict the food, because sometimes you will click, and then I start thinking, so why are the studies in the experimental analysis of behavior, why are those studies, what you see is when you add the conditioned reinforcement and you don't get the food, you still maintain behavior very nicely. Why is that happen? So we look into the literature and we realize, oh my God, they are not using, they are using what they call a conditioned reinforcer. Is, you know, in the Skinner box, there is the magazine food. And every time that a pellet is delivered, the magazine makes a noise. Like you activate the pellet, the magazine makes a noise, and then food comes. Okay? So the sound of the magazine is equivalent to the clicker. And in those studies, the sound of the magazine and the food is always one-to-one. Always. Because that's how the magazine is delivered, you know? When people call conditioned reinforcers, they add extra lights or sounds. So basically go behavior, light, click through it. Or behavior, sound, click through it. So those extra sounds and extra lights that are not following by food, they call conditioned reinforcers. And really what they are keep on going signals. They are cues that that tell the animal to keep on do another one, or keep on doing the same thing, Those are the cue properties of those signals. But unfortunately, we call those conditioned reinforcers. But those conditioned reinforcers, they might be because they also get behavior going. But those conditioned reinforcers have different cue properties. Those conditioned reinforcers tell the animal, do another one. The conditioned reinforcer of the sound of the magazine tell the animal, come to the feeder. Yeah? So when you are... when you use a conditioned reinforcer that tells the animal, come to the feeder, and you use it and there is no food there, then you disrupt the behavior. So basically, the discussion on conditioned reinforcers had been all about the reinforcing properties of the click, but not really to the cue properties of the click, which we come back, you know, that's about the stimulus control. So we need to start paying more attention to the stimulus control of behavior, and then we'll understand those things. So that's what I'm saying, you know, all these studies that we see in the experimental analysis of behavior, they are not really studying conditioned reinforcers. They are studying keep on going signals. Yeah. There is, we went into the literature. There is only one study on conditioned reinforcers in which they have two magazines, two feeders. So because, you know, they have to have a special Skinner box. They have to have a magazine that does the sound of the magazine but doesn't deliver the food, and then another magazine that does the sound and it has food, okay? To try to disentangle that, you know? If you're doing that, you know, the behavior is going to be disrupted. And it was disrupted a little bit in that study. But even there, the authors say, you know what? They were doing this study with rats. You know, these two feeders produce different vibrations, you know, and the rats are very sensitive to that. So they could discriminate even. So even if he tried to do that, still the magazine with no food could have served as a keep on going signal because the vibration was different from the sound that it actually really produces the food. So then, and we have done what? Three experiments on that. We haven't. And that one, I really want to try to publish because it's important not only for animal training, but also for behavior analysis in general, to try this, to distinguish that not all conditioned reinforcers are alike, you know, that they differ in their Q properties, and this different makes them function in a different way.
Well, I never knew all of that. So.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. But, you know, all of it is just about, again, you know, try to bring all these phenomena to the laboratory to start looking at the details. And that's when you are, that's when all these details start coming at you, which is good, you know, because then you start knowing more about the relevant variables. And once that you know more about that, that makes you a better trainer.
And I have a million questions, but
we're going to have to do another podcast later on. So, because I realize there's a lot of food for thought here, sir. And probably you're going to get a lot of questions about what does he mean by this or what. Which is
hard. Yes, I think we'll turn this into a double episode to break it up for the listeners. Hey, thank you so much for all of that, and appreciate that we could just probably keep going, but we won't. We'll wrap it up there. Just final thoughts, Jesus, and you might have answered this question already talking about the power of antecedents and stimulus control, but do you want to build on that and where you want to see this going in the next 5 to 10 years? Well, what are your
the focus topics? Yeah, it's about stimulus control. And we began, you know, Mary and I, we came up with you know, with this thing that we call the stimulus control quadrant, you know. And basically is to get us talking about, like, okay, to think in concert, like, usually we just think about reinforcement, keeping it the same, or reinforce or changing the criteria, okay? So the thing that we're going to add, and that makes the quadrant, it is, what happened to the environment, which changed the criteria. So we have, like, if you don't change the environment, the antecedent environment, and you don't change the criteria, what are you doing? And I say, okay, we call that practice. Yeah? Because you keep on going. And then the other one, okay, if you don't change the criteria, keep on reinforcing the same behavior, and then you change the antecedent environment, how do we call that? Generalization and proofing and so on. But I don't want to get too much into that. Just to give you a taste, like, we're going to have to, because we need to talk a lot about that. But we're going to have to come up with some clear ways to explain this or to set it up, to start creating technologies using or taking advantage of the stimulus control to accelerate training or think about behavior problems of that. So that's sort of the what is going to keep me busy for several years.
Yeah, well, we're all pretty excited about following along on what you learn and hearing about it at Clicker Expo and Orca and the Art of Science and Training Conference. Hey, we are going to wrap it up there, though.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Sure. No problem. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been a ton of fun, and I'm really excited that we get to add this to the ATA library, and we're going to link to everything that you talked about in the podcast right up for all you listeners out there, so you can easily find some of the things Jesus talked about, the link to the research from Jesus and his students, and also the link to Orca, the Art of Science and Training Conference, and everything else. If we've missed something, let me know and I will add it to the podcast right up. So just Jesus, once again, a massive thank you for coming and hanging out with us today. Really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. And I hope you like all this historical and rambling that I did.
Passion talking, we call
it. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Ryan.
We do, of course, really appreciate all of you tuning in today as well. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of this episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. There's something there for absolutely everyone, and we're looking forward to having you join the tribe. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much, everyone, for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.